I do really believe anchoring employees and a company in the mission and just like repeating that and reiterating that over and over again just really helps keep people focused on what matters.
Since 2014, Bento Box founder Crystal Mobiani has been stealthily building one of the most valuable digital tools for the hospitality industry, with over 8,000 restaurants powered by the Bento Box digital platform. In November 2021, Bento Box announced their acquisition by publicly traded Fiserv in an incredible outcome for the seven-year-old startup. Hi, I'm your host, Anu Dugal, and welcome back to The 2%, a podcast highlighting women who are breaking barriers and building the businesses of the future. In today's episode, I sit down with founder and CEO, Crystal Mobiani of Bento Box. Crystal shares how she has thought about growth in an industry with notoriously slim profit margins, her experience innovating to keep restaurants alive throughout the pandemic, the importance of anchoring your team in a shared mission, and the evolution of the hospitality industry. We also dive into Bento Box's recent sale to Fiserv, with lessons learned navigating the acquisition process, the importance of early relationship building, and future planning. Let's get started. Crystal, it's so great to have you on here today. Where are we finding you?
Thanks. So excited to be here. I am in Manhattan, in New York, at my apartment.
Awesome. And how's your day going?
It's good. It's good. It's a little warmer today. I've been going into the office a bit, but since all of our meetings are like hybrids, people are still on Zoom, all of our like phone booths and conference rooms always get like filled up very quickly. So I came back to my apartment to do this podcast, make sure it was quiet.
So let's start with your background. So I know that prior to Bento Box, you spent over 10 years as a product designer and user experience expert. What would you say are the most important lessons or skills that you brought from that experience to your work at Bento Box?
I would say two things really stand out. One was I just knew how to make products. And so when you're starting something early on, and you need to bring something from like zero to one, having that skill set of being able to actually like visualize something is really valuable. And it's valuable in day one, but then over time as well, just being able to take those like visual skills into consideration and the whole design process is really valuable. And then I think at the end of the day, design is really, it's really about people and getting people to take a certain action or feel a certain way. And so I think that like really building a company is a lot about people, employees and customers, and, you know, really inspiring people to, do great work or, you know, use a certain product or a certain feature. And so I do think that, that design background really, there's little ways that I've just used it throughout and just so subtle, but I can always like point back to my experience as a designer.
That totally makes sense. I guess for our listeners who haven't heard of Bento Box, what would be the best way to describe what you do?
Yeah, so Bento Box is a platform that connects restaurants to their diners, first starting with their website and then builds in different e-commerce tools and marketing tools to help them actually drive revenue and engage more of their diners through their digital property, which, you know, again, starts with their website.
And what was the inspiration behind deciding to start Bento Box? Where, you know, what was the gap in the market or the industry that you're looking to tackle?
So as I was working as a designer and I was working for myself, I started working with a few restaurants in New York on their, just very simply, their websites. And through that experience, I started just learning about how restaurants really wanted a way to represent themselves online that represented their brand and the experience that they brought to the table. And at the same time, they were feeling very frustrated that opportunity was being taken away by like different marketplaces, and they were actually losing their diner relationships to these marketplaces. And they really wanted to solve all of that through their website. And so, you know, there was obviously a pattern with the different restaurants I was working with, and I, as a service provider, was trying to solve this with the horizontal platforms that existed at that time, like Squarespace and WordPress. And it was really hard to give them kind of this simple functionality that they needed as a restaurant. And again, because I had built digital products before, it was kind of a no-brainer to build something from scratch that could address their needs better. And it was going to, you know, cost less for them, and it was just going to be easier. And so, I just start working with a couple of restaurants and just saw the pain point. And I was like, I can build this and I know how to solve it. And so just went ahead and did that.
Amazing. You make it sound so simple.
I mean, the idea to do it just felt very simple at the time. To get it to where it was today was a bit more complex, but it was really simple, you know?
Yeah. No, definitely. So, you know, another question along the lines of, you know, the interest in the restaurant industry, you know, what was your, as it relates to your upbringing as a first generation American, how did that inspire your interest in hospitality? What was, you know, appealing to you about restaurants, you know, when you were growing up?
Restaurants played a real special role in my life. I hadn't actually worked at restaurants, but I spent, they provided some very memorable times growing up because, my parents are from Iran and they came here in the late 70s. And so I was born in the States. And so there was always kind of that cultural gap between us. And so I had like my one like at home Persian culture, and I had like school, and I had like my American culture and my American friends, and I really felt like restaurants were the place that helped bridge the gap between those cultures, and it was a place where I was able to kind of connect with my family in what was like my other American culture, I just have a lot of respect for what that industry brings to the table, whether people are like celebrating or, you know, meeting for the first time or, you know, at a business dinner. But I just feel like restaurants have been the place where I've, you know, spent some of the most important moments of my life. And I think a lot of people can attest to that. And so when I was in a position to be able to give something back to this industry that I loved and had created these moments, I felt very grateful to be in that position.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. I guess going back to the early days of Bento Box, you know, you have a great idea. Obviously you're feeling kind of customer demand through some of the, you know, restaurants that you know. Beyond that, how did you think about growth? So, you know, restaurants notoriously have very slim profit margins. So how did you convince these restaurants that, you know, Bento Box was the right decision for them?
You're totally right. It is a tough industry with really narrow margins. And we were really, that was very clear to us early on. And so it was, and our product, you know, it costs more than like a DIY product. And so there's two approaches that we took. One was that, you know, I had worked as a designer that, you know, set up restaurant websites, and I knew how much, you know, it could cost, and I knew how much it could cost long term. And so we spent a lot of time educating that even though, you know, the subscription would be higher than regular website hosting that they were used to, long term, you know, every time they wanted to make a change or they wanted to, you know, as their business grew, needed to expand what their online presence was, they were going to pay thousands of dollars to make that happen for them, or they weren't going to be able to make it happen at all. And so there was, you know, walking restaurants through kind of the long term cost savings that there would be, but then also very quickly we needed to make sure that the platform wasn't seen as like a cost center, that it could actually like had real ROI in it. And so that, you know, between like revealing different data in terms of like, you know, what the traffic was to the website and building in e-commerce tools so that they were actually making money. So BentoBox wasn't something that they were just paying, but they were seeing money going into their bank account from BentoBox. In addition to, you know, building in marketing automation tools that actually like drove them more revenue and showing the metrics and the ROI around that. That was a really important step that we took really early on to make sure that we weren't just contributing to like the narrowing margins.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. One thing I remember being impressed by, it's simple, but you know, the fact that Powered by BentoBox was at the bottom of so many restaurants' websites. I feel like, you know, that probably also, when you think about virality, you know, curious whether that's something that, you know, you found to be effective.
Yeah, I mean, I would say in terms of like our very early growth where, you know, you don't have a ton of money to be spending on like paid advertising and marketing and, you know, you're just a really young company, you have to find these kind of creative ways to get the word out. And Powered by BentoBox was, you know, on the websites was a huge, huge thing. And, you know, we were very lucky to be able to start with some of like the best restaurants in the world. And so there was a ton of visibility and we were able to establish trust with those really well-known restaurants. And then we were able to get the visibility out there through the Powered by BentoBox footer. So it played a huge role. And it's funny because it was something, I'm sort of a purist in how I approach things. And it was something that I was, didn't want to do. And one of our very early employees, who's still with us today, convinced me to just try it. And, you know, it was the best move that we ever made.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So kind of fast forwarding to, you know, the last, call it 18 to 24 months, you were featured in a great, article in the New York Times around, you know, how restaurants had to deal during the pandemic and particularly how restaurants had to kind of reevaluate the importance of their online presence. I remember, I'm not sure if this is correct, but I think you guys added 2,000 restaurants to the client list during this time.
Yeah, I think it was somewhere around that.
Yeah, I would love to just hear about, you know, you're obviously dealing on one hand with, you know, everything that's related to the pandemic and other hand, you know, trying to be as supportive as possible to the restaurant community. So how did that go for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really crazy, crazy time. And I think that in a lot of ways, what we had been talking about trying to educate restaurants on for the past like 5 years-ish was becoming reality. When their brick and mortar properties are shut down, you know, all they had was their online properties. And so we wanted to make sure that we were equipped to support them. And so there's a lot of quick moves we made in terms of breaking out some of our features so they could be purchased and set up quickly without having to do like a full like website setup. You know, there was a lot of uncertainty around the pandemic and, you know, we made the choice to, when we didn't know what was going to happen, keep a lot of our staff on board because we actually believed that we would have this influx that we had. And I'm glad that we did because we were right and we were able to accommodate restaurants, you know, signing up very quickly and wanting to get up and running very quickly. And I think the most important thing, I think obviously the pandemic was a really tough time for everyone. And our team is very, very mission driven. And I think it was really important that we were just in a place where we could help this industry and we could actually really make a difference. And I think, you know, from going back and forth from your bed to like your Zoom calls all day long into your computer and during that really trying time, I think that focus on our mission and our customers really helped keep the energy level up and everyone was really rallying around, you know, being present and being available and doing whatever it takes to make sure we got these restaurants up and running quickly and that we were available to support them.
Yeah, no, so, you know, kind of farsighted and obviously had a huge impact on the industry. So when you think about kind of innovation from a technology or product perspective, was there anything that kind of stands out in terms of what you and the team did during the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, there, you know, taking just breaking apart our product was like, you know, a really important move. We also built in a couple tools into our platform, like ways to be able to contribute to a restaurant's, I think like we called it their COVID fund. So they could add like a 99 cent fee when they were purchasing to be able to like check out very quickly and get additional revenue. And there, I wish I remembered the number of like orders that had that attached to it, but it was very widely used, which was great. We also took our online ordering product and we modified it so that it could be used for tableside ordering too, which was really important as outdoor dining started coming back and restaurants were short-staffed and trying to also limit interactions. That was a really great feature that even restaurants still even use today to be able to increase the efficiency and safety for the staff and the diners.
What about, when you think about your experience as a leader, I can imagine there were a lot of kind of ups and downs during the period of really kind of scaling and exponential growth. Any takeaways in terms of, things that you put into place that you felt were effective?
I would say the most important thing that we learned was first, like, just always leaning into our mission, and that was something that it's not really quantitative and it's kind of warm and fuzzy, but you can always when things are in flux, you can always go back to like the why people are here and why what they're doing matters. And I think especially during a time when things were moving really fast and changing really quickly and there was so much uncertainty, being able to like ground everything in that mission and why what we're doing matters is really important. And then I think that I would say that remembering that, everyone, everyone is human and you're working with like a lot of people during like a really difficult time, but also a very exciting time. But just remembering that at the end of the day, we're people and, mental health matters and making sure people are like taking that time for themselves and you're creating that space and opportunity where that's like, okay. Even though it might feel like there's just so much to get done and it's so overwhelming. Yeah, those are the two things that come to mind.
Awesome. I love those. So I guess, as you think about what Bento Box looked like, in the early days in terms of product offerings, how has kind of your consumer insights, how have they impacted, the product offering as, as you guys have evolved over time?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing that we've learned is historically this idea of a restaurant being, a primarily in-person and on-premise experience. And then, on the side, there's kind of some additional ways to make money online. And those were kind of smaller pieces. That has really evolved where it's the restaurant experience is really a combination now of their like eating a meal there, but also how you can create experiences through events or order online or do meal kits or order products or pantry items, and they've really become more like lifestyle brands. And so we've really been thinking a bunch of steps ahead and how do we accommodate like what the actual like future of restaurants look like. And it's not just having like one silo for like digital and one silo for on-premise, but if you bring all that together and you have like this holistic view of a diner, that becomes really powerful and it gives restaurants a real competitive advantage. But at the same time, you have to remember that people who have started restaurants, like they didn't start restaurants to like sift through data or like, have a CRM. So you really need to help restaurants create these like these like surprise and delight moment for their diners in almost like an automated way. And so that's kind of what we've been thinking about. And we've just been trying to figure, you know, we've really worked on bringing the on-premise and online together into one experience. And then how do you make restaurants more sophisticated through just like automation, not just giving them insights, but actually like actionable insights.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. Just, I guess, switching gears a little bit to sales, you know, I can imagine that in this industry, you know, it's obviously a crucial part of your business. What have you seen be the most effective kind of marketing channel? And secondly, has that changed as you've scaled?
Yeah, I mean, early on, you know, we talked about the Powered by Bento Box footers, like a lot of organic channels were ones that we, you know, really leaned into. So Powered by Bento Box, and then content was really important. So early on, we really became like the domain leader for restaurant websites by just putting out content that around like restaurants' websites and online presence and digital that like no one was really doing at that time. And so those two like organic and more like affordable ways were how we scaled and got you know, leads in the door for our sales team in the early days. And then as we established our brand and restaurateurs would recognize Bento Box, I would say now we do invest more in like paid, whether it's search or Facebook, because we have a more recognizable brand than we had in the early days. And then also investing in kind of more like outbound campaigns. And again, like, you know, if you called a restaurant like 7 years ago and you said you were from Bento Box, they had no idea what you were talking about. But today it just holds a lot more weight, you know?
Sure. No, definitely. You know, a couple months ago, October 21, you announced your acquisition by Fiserv. Huge congrats again. Fiserv's a publicly traded company, global provider of payments and financial services, technology solutions. Huge, huge accomplishment. What was this process like for you?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we're so excited about what the future looks like with Fiserv. But, you know, it really, for us, it started out as more of a partnership, integration relationship. And I think that was great because we really learned a lot about each other's businesses, and you really got to know the different the people on the other side of the table and really understand different products. And it became so obvious in those interactions how much our perspective on the industry was so aligned and how much we could really complement each other in reaching this like future state. And so it really quickly evolved into more of an acquisition conversation. The alignment of our visions and strategy was just so important and made such a huge difference in you know, determining if this was the right path for Bento Box, because it's not like we were adopting another company's strategy. We were genuinely we would be in a position to really accelerate what we wanted to do anyway. And I think that's really rare, and I'm really excited about that.
Amazing. In terms of your biggest lessons, you know, starting a company is hard, scaling a company is hard, but I think the exit is incredibly challenging. Any lessons that you would share for founders that are, you know, just thinking about how to approach the potential acquisition opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, I think that building the relationships over time is just so important. And it would feel like, you know, while you're in the middle of building your business, it feels counterintuitive to be just kind of connecting and, you know, sharing the latest updates with companies that could be potential buyers in the future. But it's really one of the most important things. And honestly, Anu, it's one of the things that I think that I learned from you. I'm serious. And it makes such a difference, because when an opportunity arises, and it really only takes one, you have those relationships established and you're not like starting from scratch. And because starting from scratch is it takes a long time. And when things are moving quickly, it's really hard to establish that foundation. So I would say, I think that's the most important thing, is even though it feels like maybe not the best use of your time as you're building your company, it's really important to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. As you think about, you know, the future of Bento Box post this acquisition, what's next?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to, you know, continue to lead Bento Box and, you know, in its current form, which I'm really excited about. And, you know, as I mentioned before, we really believe that this becoming part of Fiserv really accelerates what we wanted to do anyway. And what that was is this real unified end-to-end platform for restaurants. And again, going back to the idea that there is no difference between this on-premise restaurant experience and this digital restaurant experience, and Fiserv and through Clover, it really helps us bridge the gap from, you know, the digital to the on-premise. And I think we do the same for them in the other way, and really have like a real powerful unified offering for restaurants. And in addition, like, again, like, my goal has always been to just be able to work with and impact and support as many restaurants as possible. And, you know, we work with almost 8,000, which is, I think, like 14,000 locations, but Fiserv works with over like 300,000 locations. So what better way to be able to actually do that and reach more restaurants than being part of a company that works with like hundreds and thousands of restaurants? So I'm really excited about like what we bring together and the opportunity to just be able to support more restaurants moving forward.
So I guess, you know, going back to this podcast, the 2%, we're really focused on highlighting stories of people who are being thoughtful around improving the statistics, particularly as it relates to investing in diverse founders. From your point of view, what do you think it will take to see kind of a meaningful shift as it relates to, you know, investment in diverse founders?
I've always been a show don't tell, a leading by example type of person. It's much more about just doing than like talking about doing for me. And so because of that, I think that the most important thing is just to create examples of like success of that happens through just leadership that doesn't look like maybe what have been conditioned to expect. And I think the more and more we can just show those like successful outcomes and those success stories and you know the diverse backgrounds that can come from, it'll take time, but I from my perspective, it is the best way to do it. You know, I think that's it's the most important thing that we can bring to the table as, you know, diverse founders.
I agree.
Yeah.
So we're now going to close out with our lightning round. And this is a few questions. Feel free to answer with whatever comes to mind first. Let's start with, what is your favorite restaurant today in New York City?
I'm glad that you said today because, you know, it's changed. I love this restaurant in like, it's like deep Lower East Side, almost Tribeca, called Juku. And it's like an izakaya on the main floor, and downstairs it's like this cool Japanese almost tiki bar, and then on the top floor it's like a really, you know, high-end omakase offering. So it's like, you know, depending on what you're in the mood for, it's got something great, and just the food's awesome.
I have to check that out. I guess same question, what is your favorite restaurant in the world?
Yeah, totally different, but the first thing that comes to mind is this place in Spain called Extabari. It's in Basque Country. And it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's just a very simple restaurant. I mean, but it's just, everything is done so well. And it's like, simple, like meats and fish and just amazing vegetables. But it's one of the you know, restaurants that I always like think of when I think about like traveling and eating.
If you were to think about one meal that you could eat every day, what would that be?
It would definitely be sushi.
Ooh, wow. What is the best advice you've ever gotten?
Former CEO of Foursquare gave me, Dennis Crowley, when he said that, you know, you can choose the type of leader and choose the type of CEO you want to be. And that I found that advice to be very freeing because I felt like I could just kind of lean into the things that I could do best. And I didn't have to, you know, fit some sort of mold of what I thought like leadership should look like.
Most important or hardest leadership lesson that you've gone through?
I would say, I think the hardest thing is, you know, you build this company, you have these amazing people around you, but the company, you know, grows really quickly, and people kind of grow at a different pace, and the people sometimes that get you from A to B aren't going to get you from B to C, and I think that's a really hard thing to come to terms with because you just, you know, you love all these people that have like, you know, been around for so long.
Anything you want to plug or announce?
I mean, I don't think I can top the announcement I made over the past month. So no, nothing in particular.
And where can our listeners find you online?
My Instagram is Crystal Mobiani, KrystalMobiani. I think it's the same thing on all the different social networks. So just my full name. Yeah.
Perfect. Great. Well, thank you so much. This was awesome and super enlightening. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. This was so fun.
Thank you for tuning in to the 2% for today's episode featuring Crystal Mobiani, CEO and co-founder of BentoBox. Crystal's an exceptional product design and people leader, and we are thrilled to include BentoBox as a Female Founders Fund portfolio company. Stay in touch with us on Instagram at Female Founders Fund and on Twitter at FQVC. And for those of you building the next billion-dollar businesses, we'd love to hear from you. Send all pitch decks to pitches@femalefoundersfund.com and we'll be in touch. And finally, if you're interested in working at one of our 45-plus female-founded startups, explore our job opportunities at jobs.femalefoundersfund.com. Make sure to subscribe to the 2% on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening. And stay tuned for our next episode with powerful women founding and funding the future. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes or simply tell a friend about the show. That would help us out too. Until next time, I'm Anu Dugal, and this has been the 2%.
We're funding the future.